Our next reader is Mary Ann Robinson.
Oh, shucks. I said earlier today that from another pulpit that we're all ministers, and there's a lot of ministry going on here, and I sure am becoming converted. Oh, well, it's never too late. It just shows you. You all know who Jack Michelin was?
Of course.
Of course. Some people don't, and you know.
I don't know.
You don't? Or who he was?
I really don't know.
He was a wild, passionate poet and artist, painter as well. And Julia could tell you more, and other people could tell you a lot more. But let me tell you something about him in this poem, okay? It's called Yesterday and Today. It's the name of one of my books, but not this one. Yesterday was St. Patrick's Day. At church I sang Wearin' of the Green and heard Celtic Irish history and marveled at the kids gathered at the storyteller's feet, riveted by the leprechaun and the fairies. Later in San Francisco, heard Jack Michelin read and bought a handmade booklet of his Grandpa Louie poem for $2 and stroked a soft gray cat resident of the bookstore, and ate corned beef and cabbage in a mission pub where young people gathered and the band was setting up with ear-splitting sound checks and the back bar was from Gold Rush days and the name lettered on the broken stained glass window read Henry Schlichtmann. Well, today is Monday and I showed up for a doctor's appointment only to be told I'd have to come back another day because they forgot to send me instructions for the procedure. And a patient in the office told me, everything happens for a reason. And I asked them to pay the parking fee. And I went to the bank and the parking lot attendant talked my head off about my old Chevy Nova. And I had a fish taco in a place where I was the only customer. And when they took my order, they asked, what's your name? And then I was trapped in an uncomfortable chair for 2 hours while the hairstylist colored and cut my hair. And I went to sleep sitting up. And now I'm at a sidewalk cafe, a table, on a busy Oakland street, and it's 2:20, precisely the hour of the title of a poem I wrote 30 years ago in New York. Well, you didn't learn much about Jack Michelin, but but this will tell you a little bit more because that was about, I don't know, 8-10 years ago, and this is called Yom Kippur Connections. Suddenly I'm reading Jack Michelin's poem, Souls, S-O-U-L-S, to his Grandpa Louie, found the tiny handmade booklet hidden between hardback tomes, an exquisite work of art, rough textured and wildly colored, signed by Jack, number 48 in an edition of 200, pieces of his paintings inside a bumpy, tawny-colored cover like Jacob's coat of many colors. There lay Jack's passionate poem to Grandpa Louie, written on Yom Kippur in 1957, which is this week, but without the calendar I would not have remembered, and my long-lost half-brother, Jamie, son of our father, Henry Smolens, grandson of Oyser Smolenskin, called me this week to say, remember me? I'm your brother by Henry's third marriage. 46-year-old brother I have. And I found myself weeping with memories of the long-lost, the barely known, Oyser and Henry and Jamie, three generations of my Jewish family on one side, and Jack Michelin, another Russian Jew, who pushed a truck in New York's Garment Center when he was Harvey Silver, a radical activist worker, before he morphed into Michelin, the poet and painter. Bet you all didn't know that. And I wept for myself and my Jewish heritage on Yom Kippur when I picked up Jack Michelin's tiny handmade book, his passionate poem, Souls, dedicated to his grandpa Louis, wanderer, lover of life, lost soul, like all of us. And here's one I want to dedicate to, I don't know why, to Kirk. And all of us. Because I told you, I confessed that coming here, I figured I was going to read a whole bunch of other poems besides the one that I read up in that wonderful vaulted ceiling, marvelous Pacific School of Religion Bay Museum. It was a beautiful place and very inspiring.
You know. The light is better here.
Yeah, and the
bat
right, and people, yeah, bat blunder. That's right. And here's another painting by Tom Schultz, and he's right in the back there. This happens to be one of my favorites, so I'm glad it's. I like the other one, but this is okay. This is cool. This is wow. I mean, okay. This is a whole other thing. This is called Autumn Musings. The late October light is gentle, pale, soft as a baby's skin. Even the bees are lazy as they buzz dreamily in the hazy rays. Soft, sad sigh says, slow down. Somewhere a little wolf puppy yaps, big adult yawns, yips and yaps, yawns and yowls, rising, falling, rising higher. You could play if you want. Cacophony of answering sounds echoes in unseen distance. While at the other end of the endangered spectrum, raccoons hustle and bustle, chittering, churring, growling. They lurch and lumber, hulk with bulky fur, scamper, climb, and cling to tree trunks. Handy paws in perpetual motion, feeling, exploring, searching, sensing, testing, measuring, prodding, poking, everything within reach. What can I learn from these creature callings? What can I learn from these creature callings? At one end, a closely knit clan, bonding for life, playing together, praying together as in hunting. Their only predator, the gun, the trap, the poison, avoiding humans at the price of life. At the other pole, solo travelers adapting to urban environments, thriving though we have paved over their native living space, their biggest predator, the automobile, the gun, the trap, the poison. I ponder these polarities of coexistence, the wolf's avoidance of contact, confrontation, a lesson learned in pain and blood and chewed off legs. The raccoon's ability to adapt, use its handy paws, eat anything, live and hunt alone. We hold the mysterious far-off wolf in awe, while after having killed most of them, while treating our neighbor raccoon as a nuisance. Can we two-legged critters learn to coexist with the wolf and the raccoon? Okay. Jack Michelin and Wolves and Raccoons. Now, where do we go from here? And my grandfather, Oyser Smolenskin. Okay, a couple of poems from the early poems from 40-some years ago when I was alone in New York, a single parent raising my daughter. She was about 10 at the time that I wrote these. And I worked during the day, and I'd come home at night, and so I had been in New York in an earlier incarnation, and I had moved back to Philadelphia when my marriage didn't work out, came back to New York. So this second time around in New York, there was a third time, but that's another story. First poem I'll read for you now, Nostalgia. Rain-threatening, gray, moody, swift-changing, fleeting clouds. A jazz beat, wood on grass, bittersweet horn, blowing terrible, beautiful memories of other times, far away, making yesterday one, achingly, painfully, bound up with today. And this one's Friday Night. Transcends jazz sounds of piano, bass, drums, muffled voices. Speaks of sweetest danger, awfulest loneliness, most exquisite relief into self. A peace. All's right with the world. The world hasn't yet gone mad when jazzmen blow grace and beauty, peace and harmony in the night morning air, balmy with righteous Friday night happiness. Thank you. I used to go to the Gaslight Cafe in the village and heard Mississippi John Hurt there, heard a lot of other wonderful folk singers, too many to mention. There was Tom Paxson, there was Phil Oakes, there was, and a lot of the older timers too. I heard Bob Dylan there. It's called Gaslight Cafe, and this is when I was writing poems that were so short. I think it was because I was afraid I was going to get distracted and called away, and I didn't trust that I could continue and finish. Gaslight Cafe, everyone has a story. Every singer has a soul brimming, full to overflowing. To find yourself can take a lifetime. Becoming is all. And I'll just read a couple more short ones. Scattered fragments, pieces of me all over the city. I see them indelibly etched in a corner. an intersection, a streetlight, blending into rainy pavement, a sound from a jukebox, bridges between past and today. And this is called Broke. I looked at the clock, it was 2:20. Significant somehow, a punctuation of consciousness. Otherwise, how would I know who I was, where I was, when? I was broke. I was thinking of music. I was loose and fuzzy from drinking, and the clock said 2:20. And this is called Hole with a W. Brushing my teeth while listening to a love song on the radio, I burst into tears and felt suddenly whole. I'm sure you've had that experience. Okay, a couple more about nature because of Kirk. No, it's me. It's just me. But here I feel such freedom to read about nature.
You can read your nature poems here.
I can read them. Okay.
It's okay.
All right. Here's a political nature poem. No, it's not true. I mean, everything is political. I learned that in the women's movement. You know, the personal is political. Okay, here's a wild one about a tree. Any tree. Tree, it's even shaped like a tree. See? I saw the tree full of crows and starlings, the tree with long needles in bunches of five, the tree where bush tits hung upside down and chattered, the tree that leaned over till its branches rooted in the ground. Into the ground. The tree that hugged the shape of the golden hill that gave it life. The tree whose hair was swept back and shaped by the salt sea winds. The tree that was cut back and lopped off till it grew defiantly above the building roof where no human could reach it. The bent tree, the gnarled and noble tree, the generous tree that was host to blue jays and chickadees, raccoons and squirrels, the tree that lost its venerable branches one night in a crackling roar outside my window. The tree with the glowing lights, the little tree that made Christmas a miracle, the tree of life. I saw the tree. Walking through the streets of the city, rivers flowing through rutted roads, eroded by relentless force of water, pure energy seeking its level, narrowing, then broadening out, ceaselessly twisting, thrusting, insisting, carving its course downstream toward the sea where all life ebbs and flows, merges as one. One. Hollow, a place among hills, a dark depression where the runoff rushes downhill to join the creek to meet the river to find the bay. Hollow is a gray, forlorn place in winter. All is damp, leaves piled layer on decaying layer, slippery underfoot, treacherous and yet life-giving, for underneath this blanket on the hollow floor, countless miniature creatures scutter here and crawl there, going about their tasks, playing out their lives, unaware of changes wrought by upright two-legged creatures who crash through the underbrush, trampling them underfoot while trying to stay upright on the layers of slippery leaves, here in the dark, damp hollow where old life decays and new life is born. And I'll do one more. I want to do this. This is the one I was waiting for later. Okay. This is written in 91. Called Reverie. I'm hanging clothes on the line in my backyard after the big firestorm, as I did the night of the earthquake just 2 years ago. This corner of the backyard, shared by day with birds and squirrels and cats, at night with raccoons, possums, and skunks, speaks to me of Gaia, the power of Mother Earth, and the universe we're part of. In the act of hanging clothes to dry, as my mother and grandmother did, under the bright blue sky, breeze scented with fall leaves, ground firm underfoot, a revelation overtakes me. Here in the corner of my backyard, as I hang clothes to dry in the sweet air, a fusion with nature, with people and other beings who've lost their homes or their lives from fires, from earthquakes, from poverty, from starvation, and other disasters of systems, natural and unnatural. Contemplating the human condition, sorrow, loss, and grief mingle with hope and grateful breath as I fasten a sheet with clothespins in this sacred corner of my backyard.
All right, thank you, Marianne.